Blog Talk Radio.
Do you believe that America has become too politically correct? Von Wiehunt speaks truth to power. Do you see the coming of our political and economic demise? Von Wiehunt speaks bluntly about the need to correct America's course quickly. And now, broadcasting from the Eagle's Nest, a man who makes no excuses for putting America first. Here's your host, Von Wiehunt, the Barbarian.
Welcome to the Space Age Bachelor Pad and our new Blog Talk radio show, Von Wiehunt and the Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy. Epic Retro Episode 2 with a star date June 1st, 2021 AD. Tonight is a very special night, and I welcome you into the Bachelor's Den America. This is our new radio show in Epic Episode 2, and the theme tonight is The Bachelor King Rules the World. And this show will be the second episode in a series that will span, hopefully, 1,000 years, as the Bachelor Kingdom is reborn in America and around the world. This show is based on my hit book, The Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy, the retro and modern-day bachelor guide for the new Renaissance man of the millennium and beyond. We will start the show with the Animal House Fraternity Pledge.
I state your name.
I state your name.
Do hereby pledge allegiance to the frat.
Do hereby pledge allegiance to the frat.
With liberty and fraternity for all.
Amen.
Sergeant at Arms, do your duty.
Now on your Delta Tau Chi name is Weasel. Now on your name is Mothball. Kroger, your Delta Tau Chi name is Pinto.
Why Pinto?
Why not?
What's my Delta Tau Chi name?
Dorfman, you've given this a lot of thought. From now on, your name is Flounder.
Flounder?
We now consecrate the bond of obedience. Assume the position.
Thank you, sir. May I have another? Thank you, sir. May I have another? Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yes. Every generation has its destiny, and for the young men of the atomic age, it was nothing less than to have the world as their oyster, and then wash it down with a dry martini. So glad you're here tonight, folks. You want to get a lot of calls from around the country. This is our fun show. This is not our hard-hitting political show that we have every Thursday night. There's a lot of things in the undertow and riptide of America. But this is our lighthearted, fun show to take it down a few notches where cooler heads prevail and open up the bar and mix a few drinks. You get out your favorite cigar and your red velvet smoking jacket. On this show, you can dial in at 563-999-3437. The chat room is open with our Bachelor Pad disclaimer. Please be kind. Make it fun. Let's have a great time tonight. This is all based on my book, again, The Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy, our fun show. Glad everyone's here. And we will always have our Thursday show, rest assured, from 8 to 10 p.m. Now, between 1954 and 1964, a new masculine archetype flourished in America, fresh from victory in World War II and gorged on the fruits of affluence. American men developed a democratized pop form of chauvinism for the masses, a cult of style and leisure based on the carefree life of bachelorhood. After a huge, horrendous war, they came back to America with a vengeance, with a well-paying office job and the benefits of being the victors in war and of the growing sexual revolution. The, quote, swinging bachelor in America can now cultivate, for the first time in history, a carefree and symbiotic lifestyle based on everything that was modern and hip and fun. In short, after all the wars of the world, the American male, and all the wars since 1776, the American man in the streets, in the gridirons, in the penthouses, in the farms, in the warehouses and factories, if he so chose, he could become an American playboy, the envy of the entire world. Founded in 1953, Hugh Hefner's fantastic Playboy magazine became the Bible of this modern-day male. The magazine was a veritable how-to guide for the upwardly mobile young male professional. Its pages packed with great articles, of course, the spoils of La Dolce Vita, hot chicks, stylish clothes, convertible sports cars, jazz music, and tropical cocktails under a tiki hut, of course. With Playboy, the swinging bachelor could keep up on all the latest trends, from the mambo to even psychoanalysis, while dreaming alternately of his universe of taking a yacht to the South Pacific, fishing in the deep sea, or even being an astronaut and taking a rocket to the moon. So gentlemen, pirates, and rat pack bastards worldwide, on this show I want you to put your best foot forward. Put your best red velvet smoking jacket on. Light up your cigar or pipe with your favorite vintage and cool lighter. Get the cufflinks out, baby. Wear your favorite leather loafers and slick back that hair retro Goodfellas Mad Men style with your favorite manly numero uno cologne. As we delve into the bachelor universe and galactic cosmos with wild abandon. This radio show is based, again, on my hit book, published in October 2012, entitled The Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy, and is found at fine bookstores everywhere, and online, coast to coast, that I know you will surely enjoy. If your local bookstore doesn't have it, boys, then demand that they carry it on their bookshelf. So let's start the show. You're always on the lookout for the lovely lady female ambushers. Yes, Virginia, we are chasing skirts. Based on the Dean Martin Matt Helm movie 1967, which made the ambushers and the sleigh girls retro uber famous. So whether she's blonde, brunette, or redhead, it's all good to us, baby, in the bachelor's den. And without further ado, I thank you all for being here, and let the show begin. Thank you.
you when you're short. Cause getting you is just their favorite indoor-outdoor sport. They get you in a mink, off the deep end in the drink. Female, female, they're the ambushers. Blonde and a brunette lie in wait like engines in the grass. You're coming through the pass. Then Buster, your General Custer. They get you with the hay. They get you in disguise. They get you with their lips, their hips, and their smile, their style, their eyes. They get you cheek to cheek, down the aisle and up the creek. In chase, next cake. Well, they're the ambushers.
Oh, yes, the ambushers. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about my trip to sunny California over Memorial Day weekend. It's good for the bachelor to get in a car and take the quintessential American road trip to the coast. Fantastic times. People forget that California is America's Riviera. It is just drop-dead gorgeous. Know that a lot of the news that comes out of California, 99% of it comes from Los Angeles, which there's parts of L.A. that are beautiful. Parts are the armpit of California. We always hear about the crime and the homeless there. But that generates most of the negative news that the nation loves to devour. But the coast where I stayed is, had none of those problems. It was Orange County, Newport Beach, Corona Del Mar. Go down the coast to San Juan Capistrano, San Clemente, Del Mar, San Diego, et cetera. The Temecula wine valleys, inlands, all very, very nice. And beautiful place, very, very cool. Had a great road trip. Enjoyed a lot of things out there. I always enjoy the people. You see a lot of great sights, a lot of beautiful bikini babes for the bachelor to look at, obviously. Everyone's out there having a good time. It's America. What the California coastline represents to me is America pre-COVID. Now, all the restaurants out there and bars are kind of funny about the mask. They all play the game. You know, you wear the mask when you walk in. But a lot of people weren't wearing the mask, and especially nobody on the beach was wearing a mask unless you were probably of Asian descent or something. Or freaked out by germs, but everybody was having a great time, having fun, all walks of life, all creeds, colors, and it was a great, great trip. So I wanted to tell you about that. It was, you know, once in a while, a man needs to get behind the wheel of his car and just go. I don't know about you, but when I take a road trip, it clears my mind. It clears my head. And going to the water is always very special to me. I grew up out in California, and we lived in Anaheim, and there off the coast, I had my aunt in Long Beach, by the Queen Mary. My uncle was in Tustin. I also had a relative in San Diego, and we lived in Sacramento as well, in Northern California. But being out there in L.A., Orange County, as a kid, it was truly the Golden State. I mean, the women were just totally fantastic. The music and everything, and it was great, but we traveled around the country as well. And there's a lot of great parts to the country that I'm getting at where bachelors thrive, whether you're in Kansas City, whether you're in Florida, Dallas, the Big D, Colorado, the Midwest, very underrated. All men eventually may get married and have children, but until they do, they are a bachelor. In fact, if you look at marriage, this time and era in our country, women bring 70% of all the divorces, and many men are bachelors for more adult years now than being married. Men, they may get married and have a wife for 5 to 7 years or something, but and then they're a bachelor for 20 years or 10 years before that. So
more of their adult years are spent being a bachelor than being married, and that is something I wanted to bring up to you. So just keep that in mind. And being single does not mean being alone. For the atomic age bachelor on the prowl, the prey was never more tantalizing. There were buxom blonde bombshells looking like Marilyn Monroe and ponytailed brunettes strapped into capri pants like Mary from Gilligan's Island, huge redheads, Amazons that were just dripping with diamonds and gorgeous like Ginger from the same show, people quoting Jack Kerouac and smoking French cigarettes, acting cool. The jackpot, of course, was a foreign stewardess, beautiful, exotic, and only in town for one night at, of course, your space-age bachelor pad. So the swinging bachelor's domain was an interior one. He stalked the savannah of his office like a lion on the hunt with its abundance of skirts-suited secretaries. The nightclub, his real work began after 5 and even at midnight as he prowled the clubs of his town and the bar scene looking for the ladies, which back in the day was the original Facebook. Men went out like lions in the night seeking their prey, seeking their female conquest. That is how it was done and still is to some extent. And then he would bring her back to his temple of seduction known as the Bachelor Pad, located on the penthouse floor, maybe, of a modern skyscraper. The bachelor's apartment had two focal points, the bar and, of course, the bed and the hi-fi system. The bar sported normally a tiki theme and was covered with Polynesian bric-a-brac from mail-order catalogs. Inside the colorful bottles were magic elixirs capable of releasing the primitive desires of women and bombshells by Western civilization. We're so glad you're here tonight. This is our episode 2 of The Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy. In my book, it talks about the bachelor with his personal economy, politics, money, neighbors, work, you name it. It's in the book. My book is thick and big, but it's an easy read. But it's big like the galaxy, like the cosmos. And we're glad you're here tonight. Sounds a lot like this.
This is Dean Martin, alias Matt Helm, asking you to help me stamp out spies, or at least muss them up a little. In our new picture of the ambushers, I got my hands full with Matahara's like Centerburger.
Skull.
Sure, Skull's got ice in it.
Janice Rule and those ever-loving sleigh girls.
Don't shoot.
They get you when you're high. They get you when you're low. They get you when you're standing still, or else when you're on the go. They get you in a blink. The edge you're on the brink. But bam, wham, bam.
It's too much for one mad hound, so how about pitching in a little, huh? There's enough action for everybody, so bring your friends and we'll make them honorary ambushers. They're the ambushers.
They're the ambushers.
Oh, yes. Buy the book for your sons. Buy it for your friends. Buy it for your newly divorced best friend and man about town. It is jam-packed with manly wisdom from the ages. I have collected it, guys. I painstakingly talked to expats, uncles, friends, read books, which is unheard of today. Who the hell reads books but me and my friends? But then, it's a big book, like I said, but so is the galaxy. It's large and expansive, and you will need these tools going forward in life to be a real success. You will have to navigate the minefield of life, and this book will show you how. The book may look thick, but the font is somewhat large, and you can find it everywhere on the internet. And I recommend that you read it 4 or 5 pages per night before going to bed. In a few months, you will have completely read the entire book. After you read a few pages each night before you retire for the evening, and let the book work its magic on your subconscious mind. And then you will wake up as a reborn new man of the millennium. Fearless, rogue, strong,
a leader of your pack, dynamic, innovative, and you will be, I guarantee it, a living legend. And with that, let's go to Paul the Gladiator, his call in North Phoenix. Get him on the line here, live if we can, through our Space
live
Age Bachelor Pad studio. Yes, how you doing, sir?
Good, man. What's going on?
What's going on, man? Well, this is episode 2 of our Bachelor Guidebook Show, and so glad you're here. I know you've got some great stories. This is our fun show, and I'll give you the floor, sir. Take it, man.
Yeah, so, you know, we both have talked, you know, going to college, being independent in college, hanging out, you know. I used to be vice president of my fraternity, and even when I was in college, I always advised the younger college fraternity brothers, I'm like, don't settle down with any girl in college. There's 5,000 girls here. You have nothing to worry about. And,
yes.
You know, I know you've never been married, and I was only married for about a year.
I came close twice, but they both were disasters.
Right. So, you know, and I didn't get married until I was 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I'll not marry a woman who has been married before, and she had never been married, and she had never been engaged. And the only
mm-hmm.
reason why I decided to get married is because I wanted children, and she had said she wanted children. So I said, you know, I'm not going to have children out of wedlock.
Right.
And I was like, okay, so, you know, we both decided we want a family. That's the only reason to get married, is if you're going to have it and raise a family, you want a family unit. Your children should know that, you know, their parents love them enough to get married to have them.
Yes.
Other than that, if you're not going to have a family nowadays, in this economic destruction of the Biden era especially, I would say there is absolutely, unequivocally, no reason to get married for any man if you're not going to have children and raise a family with a woman who believes and thinks the way you do.
So, God, that's true.
You know, I remember when Trump was president, there was a
mm-hmm.
lot of younger kids, younger Republican type nationalist thinking kids who were getting married and having children. And I said,
mm-hmm.
yes, that's the way it should be. But nowadays,
mm-hmm.
with Biden being the president, you have these kids, they don't even care about having children because they're leftist Democrat kids. They don't even really want to get married. They just want to, if they have a kid, they have a kid. And they don't want a family structure because Democrats don't care. They think it takes a village to raise a child, not a household, right? We remember Hillary Clinton's famous, it takes a village to raise a child. And then all of a sudden, all these kids are in the street because the village gave up on them, right? Like,
great point,
villages
Paul.
Villages don't raise children, right? So,
right.
You know, when I'm thinking about these young kids, I kind of thank timing of life that I actually was raised in the 70s, high school in the 80s, college in the late 80s into 1990, when America was really America. I feel for these young kids now. You know, talk about bachelor's
yeah.
guide and talk about a bachelor's guide to life. You know, there's all these transgender laws now that are trying to help transgender, you know, young high school and college transgenders compete with girls. And Governor DeSantis just signed a bill today and said, girls play girl sports, boys play boy sports. Let's not mix them, even in college, right? Where a lot of these young guys...
Right.
You know, that's a very formative time of a young bachelor's life. And, you know,
yes,
you got to have a clear-cut division. It's black and white. You can't make it gray or their lives will be destroyed. So, you know, it's a perplexing time right now. You know, you and I grew up in the real last bastion of the American dreams.
Yes, we
whether
did.
It was financial dreams, relationship dreams, college dreams, education dreams.
We saw the real America and its promise.
The real America. What we saw the America of why the First World War, Second World War, Korean War, why those wars were fought for freedom. The Vietnam War was fought for basically for John F. Kennedy's whim. He started the Vietnam War. Not a lot of people believe that. Just because this guy got shot as president and killed doesn't make him a great president. He created the welfare system, and he started the war in Vietnam, a ridiculous war, a non-winning war. So I don't know why everybody thinks John F. Kennedy was such a great president. I think he was ridiculous, and his father bought the presidency anyways. So,
well, JFK sent over the first advisors. It was really under LBJ, the Democrat, who really ramped it up, because that's when LBJ sent over 500,000 troops. He blew that up for the military industrial complex. But you're right, the roots of it really were in the Eisenhower administration, who also sent over advisors. And JFK sort of inherited it and just sort of passed it along. But yeah, he sent over the first combat troops. That's a fact. You're right about that.
Yeah. So, you know, now when we look at our current day, you know, young men have to be careful about who they listen to. You know, if I'm a young bachelor and I see yesterday this idiot, Joe Biden, giving a speech about any of our military, young bachelor military men that are put into war, he's the one senator that has sent more young bachelors in to fight wars around the world in ridiculous reasons. Any other senator, politician, vice president in the history of the United States.
Absolutely. That's what Democrats do. That's what they do. Yeah.
That's what they love. They are warmongers, and Joe Biden's been a warmonger. And, you know, he has destroyed more young bachelor men lives than he could ever atone for. And, you know, mark my words, he'll try to send more for some other ridiculous conflict. The only reason why he's pulling troops out of Afghanistan is because Trump demanded it, and Trump pulled so many out that you cannot leave those that are left, because it's just fractions that are left. So, you know, Trump's not getting the reward for saving our young bachelor men, right? Somehow Biden will try to get that accolade when that accolade really belongs to Trump. But, you know, if I'm a young man these days, you know, I would be confused about who to listen to. And it's unfortunate, but it's true. You know, they really don't have lot of role models. And, you know, and if there's more cry rooms put into university and colleges, our young bachelor men are going to be super confused, because they'll think they have to cry every 5 minutes. And, you know, unfortunately, these kids in college now, these are the participation trophy young men. And I hope there's enough parents and grandparents out there that took those participation trophies and threw them away and said, that's not worth anything. Let's go get the championship trophy, because that's what you and I were brought up on, winning. If you don't win, you're in second place and nobody remembers your name. And,
that's right.
It's unfortunate. Wasn't
that was the thing,
you know,
back in the day?
It was. And,
and it should
be.
You bet.
And when you lost, I don't care what sport you played. I don't care if you were in the chess team or debate team or on a football field or a hockey rink. When you lost, you fought to never lose again.
That's right.
Nowadays,
it beat you up internally. Internally, we had the mechanism where you vowed, this would never happen again to me. I will win.
Right.
That fire was in our belt, built in, man. And these young kids today, they don't have it. They don't have fire in the belly at all, or the will to fight.
You know, I never told you this story, but this is a great story of how I ended my collegiate football career. So
let's hear it.
So when I had gone from my freshman year Division III to my sophomore and junior year Division II, and then when my coach went to the Canadian Football League and then off to the NFL, I went back down to Division III, and I brought one of my teammates with me to another university at Division III. And I said, look, you know, this new – the assistant coach who took over, he does not appreciate us or like us. This coach wants us. And then we transferred to another university and made a winning team out of this university. And then we both got to go to a showcase, a Division III All-American showcase game. And during that game, now I was just doing punt and kick returns that whole year, my senior year. I was having a lot of fun, and he was still a running back. I just had a couple of injuries that took me out of that. But I was, you know, we were both all-conference and all-American, and we went to the showcase game. And the first half of that game, we were getting crushed. And we played it at a place that I talked with you about many times. That showcase game was played at Valparaiso University in Indiana.
Yes, and I know. I have been there.
And we were down 14-0 at the half. Now, it was rare to have two guys from the same school, but, you know, we had come from Division II back down to Division III, and we just looked at each other, and we looked at the coach, and the coach looked at us, right, that all-star coach in the All-American game, and we go, you know what? We're not going out like this. Don't even worry about it. We got this. And he literally looked at both me and Mark, and he goes, I trust you guys. And we both looked at each other, and I said, look, I don't want to lose it. I don't want this to be my last memory on the football field, and I know you don't either. Even though we're going to go play rugby in the spring, we're not going out like this. And we went on the field, and we both became the co-MVP of that game just from what we mainly did in the second half. And I ended up scoring a punt return. He ended up scoring two other touchdowns plus a field goal. We ended up beating that team by the three-point field goal because they scored another touchdown. And I remembered that, and I'm able to carry that lesson with me throughout my life. So I feel really bad for these young guys, whether they're in high school and college and beyond college, and they haven't had those experiences because they were told that you get a trophy just for showing up. And then how is that generation – when we are retired, you know, in 15 years, and we're retirees, how is that generation going to support this country? You know, if they don't
Paul
have a fighting
not.
Spirit, you know?
That's right. And I mean, this country, we're looking at a lot of massive problems because of the way this younger generation is. I know it's cliche that every – you know, somewhat middle-aged or older generation talks about the younger one, but this really, truly is a big distinction and a big difference. Nobody can say, you know, that this isn't a sea change in America. And you said it best, we grew up in the last bastion, the last time zone era, I said, of the real America, how it was built. We were grateful for the sacrifices that were made. You know, yesterday was the most awesome holiday, Memorial Day, for all of our veterans who fought the foreign wars, who gave us the freedom. As a young boy, I was taught, you've been given the freedom to pursue your life. You walked in on the shoulders of the warriors that were ahead of you that fought on foreign battlefields. And my parents used to tell me and my brother, they go, you boys are so lucky you don't even know it, because you don't have to be drafted as a bachelor. You have to only register for selective service, you know, Paul. And they would say, you don't have to fight in any foreign wars. They go, you can pursue your dreams and win and do things that we couldn't do. My father fought in Korea and Vietnam. I think I told you he lied about his age when he was 16 to join the Air Force. One, I'm from a military family. Two, there were no jobs. It wasn't anything like today in 1948 when my dad joined and lied. Back then he said, we know your family, son. Sign right here, the captain would say. Welcome to the United States Air Force, son. Glad to have you.
Right.
You know, with a Texas draw, we're glad to have you. I know your family, son. I know you'll do real well for us in America.
Right.
And that's how the country was built. And, yeah, these kids today, the millennials, don't have that, and it's sad because they need to – I've told them before, and I've met many face-to-face, and many have worked in my company, and I told them that, look, you have to work 10 times as hard to regain knowledge that literally is on purpose being taken from you, your legacy. You have to learn things that you weren't taught and unlearn all the crap that our schools and media have taught you. They've taught you to hate yourself. They've taught you to hate yourself, especially if you're a white bachelor male. Well, there's a war on white males in this country. There's a war on your psyche, on your sexuality, on your income. Middle-aged white men are being kicked out of jobs left and right. It just was reported today that Lockheed Martin sent only their white male executives to re-education camp for their white privilege. No joke. You can look it up. I speak the truth as well as Paul does, folks. And so my thing is, I told you guys are going to have to work twice as hard, five times as hard, do whatever it takes to break on through. Because they want to hold you down, and they want to make you a captive audience, and they want to make you a ward of the state. They don't want you to be successful. And I'll leave it back to you, Paul.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, there's certain sayings that I picked up from a lot of my mentors. I was told when I was young, I had a great ability to attract amazing mentors and also at the same time to attract very strong adversaries in business. And I would make adversaries in business because I would literally like guerrilla warfare my marketing against them. But there's sayings that I have in my house still around me that I keep around me. And for these young bachelors, these would do them very well to put up on their bathroom mirrors, put up on your door before you walk out the door. One is, you will never have a fighting chance unless you continue to fight. And there's one by Al Davis, the former owner of the Oakland Raiders, right? He owned it all the way to the day he died. He literally pushed that franchise into Super Bowl winners, right? Two times. And I keep this near that one. And he always said, you have to fight for the juice in life, right? So it's not just enough to just have a piece of fruit. The best part of the fruit is the juice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Al Davis would say, you got to fight for the juice in life.
I like
and
that.
And then, yeah, and the other one that I have in many spots in my house, and I've kept this with me all the way from high school, and this was given to me by my principal and my guidance counselor that I had from 7th grade through 12th grade, junior high school all the way through high school. So these two men, they left junior high school when I got into high school. They became the principal and guidance counselor in the high school. One would announce my football games. The principal would announce them up in the booth, and my guidance counselor came to every game I played. And because I'm not 6'4", 300 pounds, but I was super fast and talented, they always told me that I'm going to have to find a way and prove them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have that. I have to find a way and then separately and prove them wrong in many spots in my house, specific
mm-hmm.
walls, on specific portraits and artwork. And
I like
and
that.
And by keeping that in front of me, I actually was able to do that, get my scholarships, get my education paid for by the talent I could do on a football field and then later a rugby field as well. But nowadays, these young bachelors, they don't have those kinds of iconic sayings that they can carry with them every single day to drive them forward. You know, they need mantras. They need these sayings that every time I talk to a younger guy, and I have many friends that are in their 30s who I'm trying to educate in business and help do real business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, develop companies that are selling across the United States in multiple states with warehouses and products and logistics and trucks. And I'm like, I go, look, you look around my house when you come visit and you see these mantras. I'm in my 50s and I still live by these mantras.
Yes.
You're in your 30s
never.
and you've never had these mantras. I'm like, I don't even care if you steal them from me. I never see you open up a notebook and write down these mantras so that you can then go to your computer, print them out, laminate them, and put them up. I go, it takes those
right.
kinds of steps. Young men aren't taught this anymore. And if more folks would get their young men to listen to this show, we can teach them these, because the reason I say them is I want them to steal them. They're not stealing them. I'm giving to them. I want you to use
yes.
them. You know,
that's why I wrote the book. That's why I wrote the
right.
book. And that's why I designed the show, because there's nothing in America for the young bachelor, especially yes. men of a good persuasion that would hear our message and the tools that you teach, and your mantras are fantastic. I've been in your home. I've read them. I love storyboards. I love visualization boards. And Paul, you've got a great house with, and they're all over the wall. So wherever you walk in the gladiator's home, his compound, you're faced with these things, and you think about them as you're going about your daily business. And man, it does get into your subconscious mind, which is very powerful. Absolutely.
Absolutely, it does. You know, and you know, I was taught, some of my mentors, they all had kind of similar mindsets. They always told me, look, I will teach you everything you want to know. Just ask. And they literally would. Anything I wanted to know, whether it was finances, relationships with women, you know, my own personal achievement, health and fitness, right, my wellness, my investments, whatever it is. They said, but here's the deal. The real good mentors would always say, I'll make a deal with you. I'll teach you anything you want to know. So you don't have to go learn it in the School of Hard Knocks. You're going to
mm-hmm.
learn a lot in the School of Hard Knocks, but I'll try to make it easier for you. But
mm-hmm.
you got to promise me, whatever I teach you, whatever I tell you, you cannot keep it for yourself. You've got to pass it on to another who you become
yes.
the mentor of. Or else the information gets lost forever. I don't want the information to die with you.
Now, that's
and
a great point, and that's why I wrote the book. I interviewed over 100 men. People don't know this for my book. I interviewed expats. I interviewed some titans of industry, some very successful people, many millionaires, and I know a couple, and I know a few through them. And this guys that were also ditch diggers from on up. Doesn't matter to me whether you work in a warehouse, a factory, whatever. I interviewed a lot of people, and everybody at every level and strata of America has some wisdom. Like Paul said, whether it's the School of Hard Knocks or they learned it in business or commerce, it's all good and it's all relevant. And what I was trying to do was capture the essence of what they did, how they got where they were, whether you're the foreman on the factory line and you're the best, you know, guy there. What did they ever tell you guys, whether you're blue collar or white collar? I said, whatever you do in life, my mom and dad said, it doesn't matter what it is, son, just be the best at what you
right.
do. Be the best.
Right.
Be the winner.
Yeah.
Be number one. Yeah.
There's
back
a good
to you,
story.
Paul.
So when I was young, my father and another man, they were vice president and head mechanic. My father was vice president, and his friend was the head mechanic of Mack Trucks in New England. And they decided to start their own company. And a lot of people have heard of these trucks. They're called Auto Truck. And my family and his family, together, we started that company. And they had an investor. And this investor, RJ, he always showed up at the big trucking company And he would just work in the mornings, and then he would leave in the afternoon, and he had this beautiful, pristine El Camino. And whenever he showed up with his wife at dinner parties with the families, he showed up in this big, huge Cadillac, right?
Nice.
They were always dressed impeccable. But when he was at the garage, the guy would, you know, be knee-deep in grease in the trucks and the cars and everything. And I always knew he was the investor in the business with my father. They were the two money guys. And the head mechanic ran the floor. And they were equal partners. And I remember once at a gathering, everybody was like, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? And I said, you know, I want to be like RJ. And the collective adult said, then be the best at what you are. I don't care if you're a garbage collector. Be the best garbage collector and you'll be a multimillionaire.
Yes, exactly.
And then the next day I saw RJ at the trucking company on a Saturday. I said, RJ, you're a millionaire, huh? And he goes, yeah, I'm a multimillionaire. This is in the 70s. So he was
big money back then.
Yeah, multimillionaire in the 70s. I mean, today, nowadays, you'd have, you know, 30, 40, 50 million, right? So
yeah.
I said, how did you become a millionaire? And he said, you remember what was said at the party? And I said, yeah, be the best garbage collector and you'll be a millionaire. He's like, that's what I was. I was the best garbage collector. And then I took over the garbage collection company and then I sold it for $4 million. So
That's right.
No matter what you do, and if you're the best at what you do, even a garbage, you be the best garbage collector possible, and you'll be a multimillionaire, period.
Damn right. Damn right. That's
so
real America right there.
Doesn't matter where you come from. He was not college educated, high school educated, worked his tail off as a garbage man, worked his way up the company, took the company over, and then sold that company. And he was in his late 30s, early 40s. He never worked another day in his life.
Good for him. He earned it.
Good for him, right? He earned it.
Yeah.
He earned it because he would wake up at 5 in the morning and work till 6 p.m. at night, work 13-hour days until his fingers were raw. And
right.
What a lot
That's how
of
it was
he,
done.
You know, now, you don't have to do that today in this economy, but if you work your mind raw, you can get there. If you,
I agree.
You know, yeah, I mean, everybody wants to become the multimillionaire by being – they want to be a rabbit, right? They want it now. They want it very fast. One leap and I'm there. Instead of doing it the turtle way and just taking your path straight ahead – and just mowing that path down, but have confidence. You know, another lesson I learned was, look, successful people and unsuccessful people, they have two different mindsets. An unsuccessful person will take a very long time to make a decision, very long. They will hem and haw that yes or no decision for such a long time. And then once they make a decision, they change their mind very fast. That's an
very
unsuccessful
true.
Person's mindset. A successful person will look at the idea or the dilemma or the decision and make a very fast decision, and they will drive that decision into the ground before they learn every which way to not be successful down that road, but they will take all the lessons with them and then move the path to something else. And that's what successful people do. So, you know, along that mindset comes down to this. It's easy to do and it's easy not to do. It's easy to wake up every day at 6 in the morning, get to that job at 8 and work till 5 p.m. and do it for 10 years until you're the absolute best and then create your own company or buy that company and become wealthy with it. That's easy to do. It's also easy not to wake up and to stay home and not go to work. Therein lies the problem between successful people and unsuccessful people. Easy to do and easy not to do. Most of the time, people choose not to do it.
That's right.
That's the basic lesson in life, right?
I totally agree. Paula, let's get back to you in the second half of the show. Words of Wisdom, folks, by Paul the Gladiator. We're going to have him back on. And so any new callers, we're at 563-999-3437. We've been talking to Paul the Gladiator and myself, and he has some great points that you guys need to get the podcast to the show and play it over and over and over again. Paul, thank you so much, man. I'll get you back on in the second half, okay?
You got it, man. All right.
Thank you. Folks, this is a great show. I do it as a service to America. You can't say that I haven't given anything back. I have. You have to find it, and it's everywhere. The Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy book needs to be read by every man in America. Let me read you a passage from the book. And by the way, the second volume is in the editing stage right now, the sequel to this book. In chapter one, I call it the cool retro bachelor of the past, present, and future. The bachelor dream. I had an awesome dream last night that I was a cool and carefree bachelor, and it was the groovy 1960s baby. The dream was like a galaxy far, far away. I was working in my high-rise executive office in the Big Apple of New York City, smoking a Cuban cigar dipped in cognac. I was dressed to the nines with my new swanky cufflinks and my dark Brooks Brothers suit, and my career was on a nice upward trek. I was loved and admired by my girlfriend or wife, or both, and was respected by my boss and peers in the high-rise office suite. My secretary brought me coffee every morning, and she wore a sexy short miniskirt and was very attractive. We used to flirt with each other every day, and a few times even made out together after work hours, of course. I would eat lunch in Manhattan quite often or in Little Italy with my Goomba and Rat Pack friends. I was driving the latest sports car, and the government, our dollar, and the world seemed to be in perfect star alignment and harmony with the way things should be or ought to be in America to this crazy mixed-up world and what we call life. Yes, that is the dream for many. Whether you're in Manhattan or you're in the Midwest, maybe you're a farmer, maybe you're a warehouse guy. Not everyone's a white collar. Many of you guys are grunts, cogs in the wheel. You call me, you email me, you listen to the show, you're frustrated, you're pissed off. A lot of you are angry, and I sense your anger, and I definitely get you where nobody else will. My callers get you. You're pissed off, and you know when a man's angry and when he doesn't know why he's angry, I tell you to call the show. Vent. I want you to write the show at VonWeehuntShow@gmail.com. I want you to read my book. I want you to call into the radio show. I want you to banter with us and vent. This is the only outlet in America for the bachelor male of any creed, color, or walk in life. It doesn't matter to me on this show. Because we are your friends. We are the uncles that you never had. We know America is sick in so many ways. They have challenged you. They have attacked you, viciously attacked you and your psyche. But we, my friends, we are the doctors. And we will heal this wound one way or the other. Now you need to sit back and listen. And call and be active and be proactive on your end. I'm not telling you to do nothing. I want you to be active. But you don't yet have the tools at your disposal are the collective wisdom, the knowledge base that you were never given of no fault of your own. Our society on purpose has dumbed you down. They've dumbed down the school curriculum. They've dumbed down your professors. They're sending the American executives right now to re-education camp, like I talked about at Lockheed Martin. They're sending you to re-education camp. Let's call it what it is. There's a big agenda in America, a big leftist agenda to destroy you, to destroy your mind, to make you kill yourself, to be blunt. They want you to off yourself. They want you to destroy your family. They want you to do crazy things where you can be arrested and your life will be over. They want to push you to the brink, push you to the edge. I know they do. They read what the Marxists say. I read what they talk about. They want to make you so angry that you snap and you do something that you'll regret for the rest of your life. Don't do anything crazy, boys. Keep your powder dry. I know you're out there. And what I tell you before, if you're dead or in jail, just remember you're of no use to yourself. You're of no use then to your family or to us or to this movement. We need you when the time comes. We need you sane. We need you full of common sense. And you'll learn a lot of horse sense, just good old-fashioned horse sense that I, thank God, was endowed with a lot of it. I think it came from my parents, not so much from me. They were incredible. They had the school of hard knocks plus street smarts and education. They had it all. And I have it all. And in that sense, and so do my callers, my great smart callers. So you need to learn from us. You need to sit back, chill, take it down a notch, and listen and learn, because you have not learned. What you have learned in American society is a bunch of crap, to be honest with you, a bunch of leftist crap, a bunch of stuff that will not propel you forward. And then you sit back and you wonder why you're pissed off and why you're broke and why things don't work out. Why? Well, I'll tell you why, because I know the answers to a lot of these riddles and questions of life. I've studied it, I've researched it, and I freaking know. So I want you to sit back and listen, enjoy the show, call in and chime in with your own stories when you can. You're always welcome. New callers get to the front of the line on every show. We're at 563-999-3437. It's a nationwide show. And when you call, just know that we will talk about all things which affect the man's life today, whether it be chicks, dating, relationships, working out, diet, sex, God forbid, vice, the law, the economy, politics, the court system in America stacked against you, child support, kids, the nuclear family, got to have that, traditional life versus the wild and hedonistic bachelor life. We will talk about the pros and the cons, work, war, and peace, and everything else in between. On my show, nothing is off the table. When you call, have an angle how your story or quote or call pertains to the bachelor in America today, whether he is never married, just divorced, or thinking of it as a MGTOW way, which stands for men going their own way, to go forward in life. Rest assured, we will cover a lot of ground in the show, and it airs on the first Tuesday of every month. If this show is a huge success, and I can gauge that, well, then we may do a weekly show as well every Tuesday night. But for right now, it's the first Tuesday of each month with a few encore shows sprinkled in during the year as well.
Zero.
We're taking off to the moon. This is the Bachelor Pad. The group of Las Vegas lounge lizards known as the Rat Pack, including Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, love Dino, and Sammy Davis Jr. showed that a man could maintain the image of a swinging bachelor even through middle age and even being married. Rat Pack films such as Ocean's 11 first aired in 1960, guys, not the 2000 version, brims with finger-snapping Vegas style, while Dean Martin plays a debonair playboy in Marriage on the Rocks, aired in 1965 in theaters. And the great Sinatra, Old Blue Eyes, faces the twilight of the swinging bachelor and the tender trap of 1955. I also love the biker movies from the 1960s. I love all retro cool movies. They have a great story to tell, and you can learn a lot from watching those shows. Those films haven't changed in the sense that America still is America. What you see above it right now is this veneer that is fake, that is plastic. Well, back in the day, there were some great biker movie trailers that sounded a lot like this.
The female bunch.
They live free.
Taking what they want.
They come from all walks of life.
You're hurting me,
Marty. They swore never again to let a man hurt them. The female bunch.
They tease men. They torture them. They love them.
We don't give a damn about society's rules. We have our own laws here.
Break one of their laws, you won't live to regret it.
Russ Tamblyn, Lon Chaney Jr., Jennifer Bishop in the female bunch.
They're coming soon.
Don't you want to meet the female bunch, guys? Or maybe it's the shanty tramp.
They call her Shanty Tramp. Who is she? Where did she come from? How did she get the name of Shanty Tramp? Meet her friends, booted, buckled, and revved for action. Burning the highways with terror, always one step ahead of the fuzz, are the friends of Shanty Tramp. This unusual and abnormal motion picture makes those Swedish movies look like a Sunday school show. From the swamp-infested backwoods of Georgia comes the story of a lust-loving tramp. Born broke, she found a way to make money. She loved them all. That's Shanty Tramp. Teenagers will not be permitted to see Shanty Tramp without the written permission of their parents. Special uniform police will supervise admissions.
Can you imagine that? Special uniform police supervising admissions to a movie? That's how it was back in the 50s and 60s from what I've heard from my parents. Peter Fonda was in, of course, some great biker films called The Wild Angels. And, of course, he made the song by Steppenwolf, Born to be Wild, famous and easy rider. Well, yeah, it is true. We do want to party and we do want to get loaded sometimes, if that's okay with you, Mr. and Mrs. America, or the man or authority. How about those apples? Well, he sounds a lot like this in The Wild Angels. I love this.
Yeah, we don't want nobody telling us what to do. We don't want nobody pushing us around.
I apologize. But tell me, just what is it that you want to do?
Well, we want to be free. We want to be free to do what we want to do. We want to be free to ride. And we want to be free to ride our machines without being hassled by the man. And we want to get loaded.
Yeah!
And we want to have a good time. And that's what we're going to do.
Well, wait, baby, let's go.
We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a party.
Yeah!
You damn right we're going to have a party. When I was in my frat days at Purdue, I wanted it all. I wanted dorm, fraternity, and off campus, and I got it all.
on the five-year plan, of course. By design, I wanted the five-year fun college career. I had no rush to get out. I thought we have our whole life to work for the man, our whole life to make money, our whole life to pay more taxes. We're only going to be in college once. These guys that rush through college are nuts. I thought they were crazy. Rushing out, they're packing everything in, they're stressing themselves out. Guys, if you go to college, take the five-year plan. I mean, if you want to get done before, it's fine, but that extra year, man, when you're a big man on campus, enjoy it not for 1 year, for 2 years, maybe three. I knew guys that took 7 years. That's a little extreme, but take a 5 or 6 year bachelor career, and then you can be on college. You're still out at age 22, 23, 24, and still young enough to start a career. Nobody cares when you're that age anyway. My best advice to any young bachelor, stay in school. Like me, I basically went to all the parties, and I studied too at Purdue University up in the Midwest. I was an out-of-state student. I wasn't from Indiana, but I love Indiana. And, you know, like Paula talked about going to Valparaiso to play there at the university. One thing about Indiana is it's kind of on a map, it's kind of not really close, but it's a lot of good schools up there in the Midwest. And a lot of East Coast people go to Indiana because it's away from their parents. So it was sort of a Western campus for them. So all my friends were from New Jersey, New York. They were from Connecticut. They were from Maine, whatever, what have you. A lot of folks, I'd say one-third of Purdue, were from the East Coast, because they didn't have that state name like University of. It was Purdue, and no one quite knew where it was. For years, when I went down to Dallas, everyone thought Purdue was by Harvard and Princeton. It has a very good name. I go, no, actually, it's in Indiana. It's about a West Lafayette in northwest Indiana. Couldn't even be considered a distant suburb of Chicago. But you're kind of up there, it's a campus out of Hollywood Central Casting. Red brick and marble, gargoyles and, you know, on the buildings, and really cool, great mix of people. But my point is that I took advantage of all the symposiums, all the concerts, all the seminars. I actually went to like things like the Star Wars seminar. I met General Westmore when he came to campus. When Ronald Reagan came to campus, we were there the entire day, following his motorcade back in 1986. When Reagan came to Purdue, let me tell you, it was a monumental thing. I have it on video to this day. All the celebrities came through there, guest speakers. I mean, it was fascinating to sit and listen to a lot of the guest speakers. I remember a guy from Palm Springs came to our business class and was telling us about Palm Springs, how it was going to bloom and develop. And I just drove through there coming back, and yeah, everything was on track. I mean, that town is blown up out in California. When I was going to school, it was kind of a sleepy Hollywood old vintage town, but they were renovating it back in the day. So you learn so much about trends in America and what's happening. My point is that there's all kinds of people that go to school and take advantage of all those guest speakers. My God, the concerts were great. Purdue rocked as many campuses do. And though you learn, you study hard, you party hard, and you work hard, right? But I'll tell you what a fan told me when he saw my book years ago. He wrote, "Another excellent book I have read, Mr. Von Wehunt. I especially enjoyed the reference to what is now called, in retrospect, lounge music, along with its subgenre, space age bachelor pad music, and that whole bachelor scene back in the heyday of America." He said, "Those were the last days of the cocktail lounge, a place where made men and adults could go to dine, dance, and drink, often to live music. They dressed up as adults too, cocktail dresses for the ladies in dark suits, or possibly leopard tuxedos for the gentlemen. Is it too much to ask for the return of the classic American cocktail lounge? The real lounge with red velvet and burgundy carpet, marble, glass, which looks super cool, like a Dean Martin scene from one of his Matt Helm movies. Well, at the very least, they might make fun for an interesting piece at that swanky new club down the street, but your book is awesome where you talked about it. He said, brevity may be the soul of wit, but your topics are so good, they need to be put out there and explained for the world to see and read. And you did that with flying colors, sir. That was a nice accolade I got from a fan of my book back in the day. I drug it up from my email archives on the show. And I'd like to read you another excerpt of The Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy. Short little, these are little mini paragraphs, little mini chapters that I wrote back in the day. And let's get to The Bachelor of the 1970s, one of my subchapters here. It goes like this. This decade started the modern era of The Bachelor. This was the heyday of The Bachelor with that cool retro 1970s style. With a Corvette Stingray T-top or a classic black Trans Am with the rising golden phoenix bird embedded on the hood, plaid pants with matching plaid or a white dinner jacket in cool shades, The Bachelor looked like a pimped out Hollywood actor on the make. The style was ultra cool from fashion, music, and cars, with the Studio 54 disco ball lighting the way down the personal freedom-loving highway. Blaxploitation movies and films were the cultural rage. There was a downside to the sexual revolution, as it was still charging straight ahead like running with the bulls in Spain. More NASA rockets were being shot into the realm of space, and our country's manly testosterone was surging, and we just knew that anything was possible. You had cool television shows that were programmed by the Hollywood Dream Factory, such as The Love Boat, Three's Company, Charlie's Angels, The $6 Million Man, The Bionic Woman, and Fantasy Island, which spotlighted the fantasy in surreal time of the 1970s. Farrah Fawcett's hot pinup poster was on every guy's bedroom wall, coast to coast, as an icon of that age. And yes, I admit and confess I also had classic Farrah Fawcett poster and damn proud of it. That era of the 1970s is the foundation for a lot of the Bachelor space age realm and that we see today all around us. And it sounds a lot like this.
I'm your boogeyman.
Love that from that era. Now, the decline of the American Bachelor in the 1950s was short-lived. Many people were getting married back then. Nothing wrong with that at all. But starting in the 1960s, going back a decade, the marriage age and the number of single men began to inch back up as baby boomers came of age during the sexual revolution of the late 1960s especially. American bachelorhood experienced a huge revival in American pop culture. For much of American history, marriage was a prerequisite to sex. Hard to believe in this era, right? Yes, people have had sex out of wedlock since time immemorial. In fact, bachelors sowing their wild oats and corrupting young women was one of the biggest fears that society had about single men all up into this last century. But overall, sex outside of marriage was frowned upon, if not privately, then culturally, and those guilty of it suffered a high social penalty, especially if their relations resulted, God forbid, in an out-of-wedlock child. For many men, giving up some of their freedom to get married was the price paid for regular, safer, and even more socially acceptable sex. Thus, when the birth control pill made its debut on the scene and the taboo of women having casual sex began to lift big time, thank God, many men started to put off marriage. Don't blame them. What's the point of getting married if I can get sex without it? Bachelors began to ask themselves. Well, that's a fair question to ask. Society was changing. A bachelorhood that extended not just through one's 20s, but one's 30s, 40s, and beyond began to be seen, rightly so, I may add, as a viable and for some a very desirable option. Like we talked about with our first caller, Paul, the financial ruination of America in divorce will set men back decades. You drive around town, what do you see? Attorneys pressuring you, putting bugs in your wife's ear about getting divorced. It's easy. It only costs $99 to file your divorce papers today. They're not to help out your marriage or to make things seamless. What they're trying to do is get a piece of your estate, whatever the estate is, whether it's $5,000, $50,000, or $5 million. They want a piece of it, a piece of the action. They want a piece of what you've collected and accumulated in wealth. So there's a reason why men today, if you're not, there's only three reasons to get married in my book. Now, write these down, Junior. And yes, Virginia, this is what needs to be said. The number one reason to get married is to have children and start a nuclear family. If you're not going to get married, if you're not going to have children, there's little reason to get married. The second reason to get married is you really, you love the girl and you can't live without her. You really can't. You know, by hooking up with her, she wants to get married. It's, you're going to have a fun, kick-ass life and a great companion. That's a good reason, too. You see it a lot in older people where, you know, some of the older ladies or middle-aged chicks, they still want to get married. And so I've seen guys that are 50, 60 get married to women, or even younger guys, too, for that matter, because they want a companion in life. They want, and she needs the security, blah, 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 yada, yada. You heard it all before. Well, that's kind of a valid reason, too. The third reason is she wins the lottery and she's in love with you. You kind of like her. You dig her, but you maybe you're not in love with her, but she's crazy about you. And I know it sounds funny, but it does happen from time to time. Guys, why work in the corporate grind? If you got a hot chick that inherited $20 million or $5 million or won the lottery, it is a needle in a haystack, but it does happen. Yeah, marry her. That's a valid reason to get married, because you'd be set for life, and all you have to do is invest her money and have fun traveling the world. You've got a great companion, and you've got everything fully funded without having to work for the man for 50 freaking years. Consider that one as the third rail. Other than those three, there's no valid reason in American society today. Why? The feminists have ruined it. The attorneys have ruined it. The government got in the marriage business and the divorce business and the child rearing business. The government's involved. So I always tell you guys, stay away from the government. Stay away from the court system. Don't get entangled. Don't get sucked into it. All they want is your wallet and your money. It's all they want. They want your cash to fund them and their enterprises. It's not about you. It's about them. Remember that. There's only those three valid reasons. The main one, of course, is if you want to raise kids. And, you know, I can honestly say that there's still a lot of great women out there in America, but they are kind of a needle in a haystack. And if you want to find them, guys, I will just say this. When you're younger, in your 20s and 30s, it's a lot easier to find them. But if you find them, be warned, they get snatched up fast. And if you aren't going to put a ring on it, I guarantee you somebody is going to, okay? Word of the wise. If you don't care, then move on. But if you're wavering or considering it, it's kind of like that great car deal or house deal. If you don't take the plunge and commit at some point, you can kiss it goodbye. And if you're cool with that, then great, more power to you. But don't sit back and regret anything in life. The worst thing in life is to regret when you should have taken action. Like in Hollywood. I love that when the Hollywood director goes, lights, camera, action. Love that. Because that's your life. Your life is a movie of your own making. And I have a chapter about that in my book, too. This is your movie. You're filming it every day. There's a cast, a crew, lighting, trajectory, a script. Some of it you write. Some of it is given to you for your lines. Even Elvis Presley said, we're all actors on the stage of life. So view your life as a movie. You write the script. And it really is a lot of your own choosing and of your own design. Of course, if you're looking for a woman by the hour, well, they're out there too. Rest assured.
Another day, another man. This is the story of women who thought they earned their money the easy way. Only to find that they had to pay for their sins. Sex Without Shame. See Lust. Raw Naked Violence. In the boldest and most intimate scenes ever shown on any screen. In Another Day, Another Man. These are the women who fight for their men, where another man means another dollar. They have no scruples. They're corrupt and immoral. As their passions run riot. They live only for the excitement of each day. For the pleasures of each night. If you want to see a film that strips away all conventions that dares to tell all, then you must see Another Day, Another Man.
God, I love that. Yes, a lot of women in America want another man, and it's always another day for them. They must pay for their sins. And to American women of all shapes, colors, and creeds, when they meet a man, it means another dollar. I love that. That is just great. Well, some of our soldiers, we had the big Memorial Day weekend, honor our soldiers, airmen and sailors and Marines all over the world, and the ones that have died, the ones that have protected the country. Most people don't know this, but it's in my book that most bachelors have always fought America's war. It's not the married men that normally get waivers and deferments. It's the bachelors who fight America's wars. Vast majority of any platoon or any infantry division, I guarantee you, will be probably two-thirds bachelor and one-third married or engaged, to be engaged, things of that nature. But a lot of people don't know that, and they kind of gloss it over. Well, when our soldiers go overseas, we've had many wars in Asia. We've had, of course, the war in the Pacific, World War II. We had Korea. We had the Vietnam War. We're still over there. China's saber-rattling. They want to drag America into a war. They're even saying that they want a war now against Australia. They want to seize Taiwan like they seized Hong Kong. As I tell you on my show on Thursday, to kind of segue into that, we are a world of war. And we are, and there's always plots and things going on. The bachelor needs to be aware of this, that the military-industrial complex and governments want to drag you into war. They want to put you in the meat grinder and chew you up and spit you out. That's exactly how they look at it. The blood ritual sacrifice for the powers that be, the elites, and the military-industrial complex, which is very vast and very, very deep. Well, when our soldiers go overseas, a lot of times, well, it sounds like this.
What do we get for $10? Everything you want. Everything.
Yes, guys, she is horny. She will love you long time without go back to the phones. And our VIP guest here on the show, Paul the Gladiator, get him back on the air here to discuss the last hour or two of the show. Paul, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, buddy. Yeah, man, so we've been talking, having a good time. I played some promos that I had mixed up, especially for the show. And what are your thoughts about bachelordom right now in America? We talked a bit about that, about how these young guys, millennials and Generation Z, Y, X, and you name it, need to sit down, chill out, listen to your elders, boys, listen to your cool uncles like me and Paul to tell you the roadmap that you need to get on. Let's start right there, and you take it away, sir. I know you know the answer.
Yeah, you know, it's here's the thing that I've always tried to teach younger guys if they ask, you know, because you can only teach someone if they I always ask my mentors, so if they don't ask, they don't really want to know. But, you know, in today's world, you know, we are in a capitalistic world. Unfortunately, This is not 300 AD where you don't need, you know, $3 million to retire up on the mountainside. So, you know, in 300 AD, if you had 5 goats and 3 cows with 8 chickens, you were wealthy. You could go off into the wilderness and live your life. Nowadays, it's just, it's a financial world. And for any of the young men out there who are in complete denial of that fact, then we can only wish you good luck. You'll end up at age 65, dead or dead broke, living a life of quiet desperation. That's just the way that
yes.
is. But for the others, yeah, for the others who want to live a life that matters and they want to create their ultimate destiny, then you got to try. You got to go for it. If you don't go for it, you'll end up in the end wishing and saying that you would have, you could have, you wish you did. Good example of that, when I was 18 years old and I had just graduated high school, luckily for me, I did have choices of which school to go to. Basically, the highest bidder for my football ability. I also had an academic scholarship, so I could literally write my own ticket. But
awesome.
that summer, my grandfather became very ill for the second time and was in hospice for the second time. Because the first time they sent him home because he just wouldn't die. He had a very strong internal constitution.
Yeah.
So I would go visit my grandfather that summer after work. I would bring Italian ice and other ice creams, and the nurses would yell, and I would tell them to, you know, go pound sand because my grandfather is going to die. And what does it matter if he eats ice cream, right? So
exactly.
Yep. So this was a hard laboring man. He was a blacksmith by trade, and he was a quiet man, not very educated. On my mother's side, my father's side of my family was the education. And I remember that all of a sudden this man became extremely smart. And he gave me probably one of the biggest lessons I ever had in my life, which is why I do what I do today. And it boiled down to this. So this man's cerebral cortex opened up, and we started talking about his life. And he started mentioning that he wish he could have gone for it when he had all these opportunities when he was a younger man and then getting into his middle ages. But he was always told by his wife and his other family members, don't do that. You'll risk everything you have. You'll lose it all. You'll end up penniless. And he believed them, and he never went for his dreams. And many times he had all these opportunities to go for his dreams. And we started resonating. We started talking about this. And I was a really cerebral kid. And, you know, here I am with the rest of my life I'm looking forward to. And here he is at the last days of his life. And I could see it in his face, hearing it in his words.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about what would have happened if he went for his dreams. And we came to these conclusions together, actually, where he had decided, you know, if I had failed miserably and I ended up in this bed at this time talking with you, at least I wouldn't think that I didn't go for it. I wouldn't have the pain of not going for my dreams. I would have gone for them. I just would have failed. No big deal. At least he would have gone for it, right?
Right.
And then we also came to the conclusion that there's no way he would have ended up in that bed having failed, because along the way he would have had to run into somebody who would have helped him along, or he would have learned enough lessons along the way, failing and failing, of how not to fail anymore. So he would have had to have succeeded in some manner or form. So, you know, at that moment, we were both pretty much in tears, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go to the bathroom. When I came mm-hmm. back from the bathroom, I could see his body was slumped over, and I knew he passed away.
Yeah.
And I went out to my car. I just built from the ground up, frame up, in my father's trucking company, a 1971 Firebird Formula, brand new from the ground up.
Oh,
and I sat in that car, and I had a Polaroid camera in the car, and I heard this thundering noise, like, going over the building. It was on the shoreline of Connecticut. And I stepped outside with my Polaroid camera, and I still have these photos today, these Polaroids in my photo list, of these jets that were just flying over me in this beautiful sunset sky, you know, laying the jet trails. And I took like three or four of those photos, and then I sat in that car, and I literally couldn't move for many hours, thinking about that man's pain. And I vowed that I would never die like that. And you know me really well. You know my stories. You know mm-hmm. my trials and tribulations along the way. I've always gone for it at any moment in my life, to the point where when I got asked to co-produce a motion picture, I leaped at the opportunity and made it happen. When I was faced with my sponsorship racing car in the modified racing tour, and the driver was nowhere to be found because he had not made it up to New Hampshire at the time, and everybody else was looking around, I thought of my grandfather. I grabbed the racing helmet. I grabbed the racing suit. I was the same size as the driver. I leaped into the car dressed, and I ended up taking over that car for 4 years. When I was faced with the opportunity to either start a major mortgage banking company in Arizona or buy a $25,000 stallion Pinto horse to go win a belt buckle, I did the business. I leaped at the opportunities. And that's all because of that one lesson learned from a broken man who had never gone for his dreams, who had never gone for it, who died with a lot of regret. So to impart that kind of lesson, any young man who's listening, that is an invaluable lesson in life. You have to go for it in this world, because if you don't, you'll end up in a bed, and you'll wish you would have, you'll wish you could have, and you will die with that weight. And you don't want to go out of this life that way. So, like, I turned to my friend Mark and that coach in that All-American game, and I said, we're not going out like this. The same thing before that, when I graduated high school, I vowed I would never go out of this life like that. And that's
right.
The only thing I ever got, the one inheritance I got from that man, my grandfather on my mother's side, was a very inexpensive, you know, gold wristwatch. It was not real gold. And I kept that with me until it finally broke down in college. But I would have it mm-hmm. on my desk when I was studying. I would see it every day before when I fraternity house to go to class or go to practice, because I remembered I got to go for it. And I've taken that lesson throughout my life. And it's very similar to lessons in your book, to teach young men, young bachelors, that this is a life you design on your own. If you let other people design your life, and most people do, that's going to end up being a quiet life of desperation. You'll wake up one day and it'll be over. You won't even have the experiences of trying and failing. And I failed a lot. I never won a NASCAR race in that modified tour car. I watched Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt and everybody else on Sundays win. On Saturday, I couldn't win. That's okay. You know what? I wasn't the best driver. I was a decent driver, but I was there. I was on that. I was on those tracks. I was in that car. I ate lunch with everybody at the same, you know, infield burger joint where everybody else is in the stands and I'm in the infield. So those experiences you take with you. If you succeed or fail, you take the lessons that you learn with you. You know what I'm doing now. I've been working on my project while I've been listening and talking on your show. The project I'm into now, I feel, is the culmination of all my experiences. There's no way I can fail. So, you know, as long as we just continue to fight, remember, if you'll never have a fighting chance if you don't continue to fight. But don't let life happen to you. Go make your life happen. Those are the best lessons that we can, you know, impart on young men, because I was lucky to have those people who were willing to teach me those lessons, whether that it was my grandfather or my mentors. I know a lot of young guys these days, they don't have those kinds of mentors. You know, I wish everybody could be mentors to young bachelors like that, but it's just so rare. We've got to get more of your message out. You know, I remember when we first talked about your book some years ago, I said, there's no way that any fraternity does not need 25 to 50 copies of this book to give to every fraternity brother when they end up on pledge. You know, when pledging is over, and those that get in the fraternity should get this book handed to them and say, now you've got your book. There's no way you can fail now. Just, you know, you don't have to learn all these lessons. Read it, and you don't have to go out in the street and learn it. They'll probably retain half the information, but that's way better than none of the information, you know.
Love it. Paul, thank you so much, man. Words of wisdom, and you're right. Guys, keep trying to win and listen to the show, read the book, and listen and heed guys like Paul the Gladiator and other smart callers. We've been down these roads before. We know what's going on. We will not steer you wrong. Paul, thank you so much, man. Appreciate it. Have a great night.
Man, have a good night. All righty.
You bet. Yeah, Paul the Gladiator, great stories. We're going to hear more of those as the show goes on. So this show is the first Tuesday of every month, and I'll do a encore show every now and then on top of that. But this show may develop into a weekly show. Look, be a puncher in life, guys. Be loud and proud. Never apologize for being a man. We have nothing to apologize for and nothing to worry about. We have the tiger of life by the tail, and we have the Hollywood radio persona. Yours truly, Von Wehunt, and my great callers. We are Mr. Hollywood, as I am always at your service, America. The made men of America talk about their conquests in business, in the annals of war, on the streets, and with the ladies, of course. The triumphs of victory and the agony of defeat. As said by the wide world of sports back in the day. I used to love that show. This is the show, the radio show that you've been waiting for, America. I know you think about these things. You're not allowed to talk about them because the media has dumbed you down. This is the show your mother has warned you about. So be ready and be on guard, America, because we are coming at you like a roaring tiger and lion. Now, right now, I'll be back in a minute. I'm going to mix a cocktail, so I'll leave you with some Italian cinema music, which is really cool. I'll mix the cocktail. I'll be right back. called El Egresso from the Italian cinema. I am German-Italian by my lineage and genealogy. I've got my cocktail here, my cigar dipped in cognac. My red velvet smoking jacket is still on, and my Italian loafers are right here, of course. Yes, also, for security, on the German side, I have my .45 caliber. In case we are raided by the feminists or by the PC police in America, we are always ready for battle. And to our detractors and to our fans, we toast you all from our martini glass of life. Yes, and we'll get to Brett the Surfer here in a moment, who's called in, chomping at the bit to talk with you about maybe a bachelor exploit here in the last 10 minutes of the show. This is a two-hour show, by the way. Now, I'll read you a little excerpt from my book, The Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy. And Paul's right. I've actually hit up the National Fraternity Organization to sell this book to all pledges nationwide. But this chapter is called The Modus Operandi of the Superior Male, the Philosophy and Way of Life. There is a recent philosophy that Dean's mentioning here, which came out recently, referencing the way of the superior male. We are superior in so many ways, and more men, especially in North America, need to get back to their roots and acknowledge this fact of life. A vast majority of the world's greatest thinkers, think about it, inventors, engineers, scientists, generals, leaders, presidents, czars, prime ministers, Nobel Prize winners, and Rhodes Scholars, statesmen, artists, writers, and philanthropists were all men. We are like the great phoenix rising from the ashes. Women do have their important and very unique role and very beautiful role in life. But unlike the trend in American society where the women want to control everything and actually be the man and wear the man pants and boss their beta male husband around, they always strive to wear the pants, don't they, in any TV sitcom. Women have traditionally had a supportive role to men. Men being the head of the family, men being the leaders, this needs to be encouraged. Again, being the new global view of the sexes. The sexes all get along much better when the modern feminazi Western women and their accomplices all over the world, also known as dinosaur feminists, stop challenging every man every second of every day that they meet at the drop of a hat. In other words, men do not need a challenge 24/7, contrary to popular belief. We do not want to be constantly having to climb Mount Everest, to be blunt, every single day with every single woman. This is why men say, hey, screw you, ladies. We're cool to you if you're cool to us. If you're not cool to us, then go to hell. Get out of my way. You're dragging me down. It's men going their own way. MGTOW, baby. Live it. Love it. Or leave me alone. Because men will strike out for themselves. Women, you're either with us or you're against us. How about those apples? And also, we don't negotiate with terrorists. That's the American policy. And with that, let's go to Brett the Surfer. And I want to get him live. I want to hear what he has to say right now. Brett, are you there?
Yeah.
Are you there, man?
Yeah, can you hear me, Bon?
Doing good. We're on fire tonight, man. How are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing great, man. Just enjoying the nice hot weather that's coming our way. It's beautiful right now, you know, but we're gonna start having some really, really toasty weather here, man. But
that's the Phoenix weather. I mean, we are famous for our heat, right? We're famous for our heat. And that's our bad weather here in Arizona, sure. It's coming, baby.
Yeah, and there's a great Fleetwood Mac song, Go Your Own Way, you know, and that's kind of what you're talking about, you know. But I mean, the single life, it is an interesting life. I enjoy listening to the show. It reminds me of the days I was single for quite some time. But
You're married now with some great kids, which is cool too.
Yeah. Different lifestyle, man. Different calling.
And you're a great dad.
Definitely calling.
And you're a great dad.
Yeah.
And you embrace fatherhood, which is in my book. I say, guys, if you're going to get married, go for it. Embrace it. Either do it or don't. But make a freaking decision and stick to it, you know?
It's about making that decision, you know, and I think that's probably one of the most important things. You know, you've got to make a decision, whatever you're going to do. You know, today could be your last day, you know. I mean, it's been all over
right.
the news today. An officer, a young 27-year-old police officer, just right on his shift. I think he'd only been on for 2 years. And God
what
bless
happened?
The family.
Tell us the story,
you know?
Briefly.
Oh, it's been all in the news here in Phoenix, Arizona, but some guy in a BMW.
I haven't heard it yet. Tell me.
Oh, yeah. He was speeding probably 120 and ran a red light and hit a police cruiser. And both of them were killed instantly. So it's been all over the news today. But
Okay. Well,
yeah,
I've been busy doing my radio
sad.
Show. So I catch a ton of news in the wee hours of the morning. I don't get much sleep being a very busy professional, unlike you.
Oh,
but
yeah.
No, just kidding. I have to get up on this one consulting gig at 3:30 in the morning, Brett and Paul know. I have to be on United Kingdom time, which my sleep is all over the maps. People call me. They go, why aren't you answering your phone? I could be asleep, God forbid. I have to sleep sometime. My God, right? But that's a terrible story, man. Tragic.
Yeah.
And it goes to the root that, you know, we're only here for a certain amount of time, guys. And everyone's shelf life is different. I thank God, I'm sure you do too, Brett, that I've lived as long as I have with great health, and we take care of ourselves as made men of the tribe, right? But
of course.
And in this life, because you never know when it's going to snuff you out. I mean, real short story, I had a friend of mine who was in the consultant biz. He died of an aneurysm at a young age, at probably 48. It was his birthday. He was in Scottsdale, collapsed. His new wife found him, and he died of an aneurysm after a year of being married.
Wow.
These things happen.
Wow.
So you got to live every life, I mean, every day like it's your last day on planet Earth. And love everyone around you and pray that cooler heads prevail in this crazy politics of our world. But that's a wild story, man. I'm sorry to hear that.
It's, you know, I mean, and myself, I mean, I think we've all had, I've been close to death. And I mean, I think that you have to grasp each day and you've got to appreciate each day. I mean, I could give you a quick example of my, I had a German wire hair pointer, you know, and they're just really intelligent, and great working hiking dogs, you know, and they're really bird dogs. But I had a dog named Gunner, and he would just every day, his eyes would light up, and it was like it was his last. And one day, man, he ran out. Our gate was open and he got hit by a car. He's 5 and a half and killed instantly. But, you know, it was almost like he knew it was so he was going to only be here such a short time. And every day he would just grasp it. You could just see in his eyes, you know. And I mean, that's kind of the way I've always appreciated every day. But I mean, even more so after my experience with my German wire hair pointer. But I think a lot of people just, you know, get just stuck on certain things, and they're not really appreciating the simple things. And you really have to appreciate things for true happiness, you know. And it's doing what you love, you know, and going after your dreams, you know. And you know, just appreciation.
I agree, Brett. I totally agree, man. I want to thank you for calling the show. Our show also will be this Thursday, our political talk show. But thank you, man. Have a wonderful night and stay safe. Love you, man. To you and your family. Hope you guys have a great, great week, bud.
All right, brother. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Brett. It's Brett the Surfer, folks, a regular to the Von Wehunt Show. He's right, and Paul's right. Look, my dad always said we're all passing through town, okay? We're like Clint Eastwood in the poncho. As a bachelor, we're passing through this town called life in America, in planet Earth. It's up to us to make it a success or not. Stay close to God. Stay safe. Don't do anything crazy, boys, and you know what I mean. stay good out there. Work, produce for you, your family, your future, whatever, your girlfriend, just for yourself. It's okay to be single. It's okay to be a bachelor. In fact, in our brutal, brutal economic world, it's probably the best way to go right now for a lot of you guys. Go your own way. Do your own thing. If you meet a chickie in your path that you like, grab her. If not, keep moving forward, boys. Keep those tanks rolling, Panzer style, okay? And that's my message to you tonight. Hope you've learned a little bit. We're going to have the show the first Tuesday of every month, The Bachelor's Guide to the Galaxy. It's my retro and modern-day bachelor guide for the new Renaissance man of the millennium and beyond. I broadcast from my underground studio here in the mountains deep in Arizona. I want this show to be your obsession. I want you all to do well. I want you to call the show. We know you're out there because we have the software to know. We have tens of thousands of listeners. We're in 15 countries, so we know our stats. I want the show to be your obsession, as I said. I want you to internalize it. I want you to think about it. I want you to think more and take action at the appropriate times, but don't take stupid actions. Think about what you're doing. I want this show to be your obsession. I want you to call in and write me at thevonwehuntshow@gmail.com. Tell me your stories. I bid you all a great night and a great week, a successful week. And whatever you do, whatever line of work you're in, I'm with you. I'm all for the man in America. Nobody else is on your side but me, Von Wehunt, and my great callers. We are on your side. We are the father you never had. We are the great uncle you never had. We are the big brother and the little brother you never had, full of wisdom. And we thank you for listening to the show. This is your show going forward. This will be your obsession. Goodbye, America. Until next time. Thank you, and God bless.